So I've been trying for a long time to figure out how to actually preach this text that I'm going to preach this morning, which is 1 Samuel chapter 21 through chapter 23. So if you want to turn in there, we will get there in just a moment. And I think I have finally figured out how I want to do it. And you'll understand that when I get to the conclusion of the lesson. If you were here last weekend, you'll know how I finally kind of realized how I wanted to do this. And so it'll be another impact that David has had on me in helping me figure out how I eventually want to do this. But let's start by reminding us of something that happened like 1997. Most of you, or some of you, were not even born. There was this guy that moved up the FBI most wanted list. His name was Eric Rudolph. Eric Rudolph is accused and charged of bombing an abortion clinic in Birmingham, Alabama. In 1998, he goes and he sets off a bomb in the Olympic Park in Atlanta, Georgia. Also, he bombs a homosexual gay nightclub in Atlanta. And finally, there was a bombing in 1998 in Birmingham, Alabama, of that abortion clinic where, '97 was the Olympic place. But nevertheless, in 98, they get his truck leaving the scene of the abortion clinic in Birmingham, Alabama. And from that point on, they are looking for this guy, but they cannot find him. The FBI is confident that he is in his general hometown, home area, in the Nantahala National Forest in North Carolina. Some of you may have been there. James and Nicole and the boys were pretty close to there, but I'm going to put a picture up of what it's like there. I have camped in this place many a time. And in fact, we stayed at a campground that the FBI used as its headquarters to find him. They finally found him in 2003. After 5 years on the run, they got him. And do you know how they got him? It was late one night, it was like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and he had gone down to a dumpster to get vegetables out of the dumpster. And some rookie cop found him out there and said, "That guy looks familiar." And lo and behold, it was Eric Rudolph. And I say all of that to say, is this guy lived a crazy life while he was on the run. He was very much a survivalist in general, but he had built a patio where he could be seen. And in fact, this place, Fires Creek, was within earshot of where his camp was, that is now a picnic area. They would say you could go up in there, you could hike for 30 minutes, and you would not see a soul for years. That is how secluded a place he had. But he had to provide for himself in that area. But the FBI never bought the story that while he was on the run, nobody helped him. They didn't buy that story. They said there had to be somebody that helped him and some people. Because in that area, they would have held the very same beliefs as him. Anti-homosexuality, anti-abortion, and they wouldn't give up their own in order for this. Well, to make a long story short, what I want to talk to us about is whether he had help or not. We need help on the run. David, in 1 Samuel chapter 21 through 23, he was on the run from the authority figure, Saul. And he was on the run from Saul not because he broke the law, but because he killed a giant, and the people said, "David has slain his 10,000s and Saul his 1,000s. And overnight, Saul hated the one who used to play music for him, the one who very much was a part of his armor bearer, one who was best friends with his son. overnight he went to kill him. And David has to flee and on the run. And the thing that has stood out to me as I've been going through this story in 1 Samuel is that David, not only did he receive help while he was on the run, but he gave help while he was on the run. Psalm 34 is an example of that, and we will reference that in a moment. But I want to draw this home real fast before we get into the story. I doubt there is anyone in this audience who has ever been on the run for your physical life. If you have, I would love to hear your story. But you know what we're all on the run for? Our spiritual life from Satan. You're going to be able to make some spiritual applications when we get to the end. But even though we've never been in a physical pursuit from the law, we've had someone wanting to lock us up for a long time. That would be Satan. So we're going to pick up in our story in 1 Samuel chapter 21. And I'm not going to read a lot of verses this morning. I'm going to tell mainly the story, but I'll reference it. We pick up in the city of Nob. And Nob is modern-day Jerusalem. And apparently it was one of the first places, if not the first place, along the main road that you got the crystal clear view of Jerusalem. And so from that reason, it was often called the lookout. It was a place in which you could see for miles and miles. And in this city were a lot of priests, one by the name of Ahimelech in particular. And it is at this place in 1 Samuel chapter 21 that David and his men, while on the run and having no food to eat, they go to Ahimelech the priest. And Ahimelech gives David help. And you remember that story of what he gave him? He said, I don't have any bread. I don't have anything but the holy bread. The bread that was only right for the priests to eat. And David said, give it to me. And guess what Ahimelech did? Ahimelech gave it to him. Ahimelech is asking him all kinds of questions about, David, why are you here? What are you doing? I didn't know that you were coming. And it's interesting that if you read the story and you go back on your own and read it, David doesn't give him any details. In fact, David almost deceives Ahimelech, trying to maybe protect Ahimelech from knowing what he is doing. He doesn't tell him that he's running from Saul. He says he's on a business for Saul. Which gets me to a side point. Everything that David does is not something that we should emulate. Obviously, right? The sin with Bathsheba. Same thing here. We're going to see David use some deceptive tactics to try to deliver himself in these things and some others. And maybe that's not always the right thing to do. But what we're going to see is that what David really is doing is he's putting his trust in the Lord when it's all said and done. But we all make mistakes along the way in doing that out of various things. So Ahimelech, whether or not Ahimelech should have even given him this bread is a debate. Okay? And I'm not here to say one way or the other. But I'm saying that Ahimelech helps him out. And then David says, do you have a sword with you? And Ahimelech says, we got no sword. Because guess what? The priest didn't need to go hunting and fishing. They didn't need all that. They had the food that was given to them. But he said, well, you know what sword they did have? Have the sword of Goliath, the one who you killed. And David said, give me the sword. And so Ahimelech gives him a sword. And we know how big Goliath was. So he probably had a very big sword too, right? Might have even looked like a dagger in his hand, but in David's hand, this was going to be a big thing, almost unusable. But yet, that's what you need. That is what you get. And Ahimelech offers him this help. And I want you to notice now in verse 10 what happens on this very same day. So on this very same day, David rose and he fled to Gath. He doesn't hang out there very long, and you're going to see in a minute why he doesn't hang out there too terribly long. But David flees and he goes to Gath. Now, most of us, Gath is not going to stand out as a city. But it was one of the five big Philistine cities. So he doesn't go to his own people for help this time. He now goes to the Philistines, to the enemy. The people that are fighting Saul. The people that will fight him when he is king, he goes to them. Then the king is Achish. Now, modern day Gath is this place that's about 30-something miles away from Nob. But there seems to be some pretty good indication and evidence that it wasn't there, but it was up just a little bit higher to something that was about 24 miles away. Doesn't really matter in that, except for, again, it's a foreigner. He's going to foreigners for protection because his own king is out to get him. So what happens in Gath? He goes to Gath. And it is there in front of this king that the people know David. And you would pick up in verse 11 that the servants of the king, they say, "Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing to one another of him in dances? Saul has struck down his 1,000 and David his 10,000s. The very thing that got Saul jealous, guess what has gone to the enemy? That. Do you know why it would have gone to them? Do you know who was from Gath? Goliath. His hometown was Gath. They knew what was being said about this guy David, and do you think they wanted him in their place? No. And they are afraid. They are afraid that David is going to get them, that David is just there spying them out. And so David becomes afraid. David has this fear. And so I want you to notice verse 12. So David took these words to heart and he was much afraid of Achish, the king. And so what did he do, verse 13? He changed his behavior before them. And he pretended to be insane in their hands. And he made marks on the doors of the gate. And he let his spittle run down to his beard. The guy just went partially insane. Because guess who a king is not going to kill? Somebody who's just crazy. Like, are you kidding me? You're bringing me this. And you just kind of picture it as kind of like someone who has very serious mental issues. They've got no control. They're not going to do me any harm. And it's funny what Achish says. Achish says, "Do I not have enough mad men in my nation? You bring me this guy? Do you think I'm going to allow him in my house?" And so guess what he does not get in the land of Philistia? He doesn't get help. So he leaves from there. And notice the phrase there, and go down with me now. He escaped to the cave of Adullam. Now the cave of Adullam is a place in which we will talk about here in just a moment. It is in this cave of Adullam that is not too terribly far away. It's about 7-8 miles away. And it's interesting that there is now this place called the Caves of Adullam Park. Because as you can tell there in the topography, you've got like four mounds right there. And what you have on these mounds are a great view. You've got a wonderful view of the surrounding areas. Again, he's on the run, so what do you want to see? The enemy coming after you. But here's the other cool thing about this place. As the place is called the caves, there were many, and there still are many caves there. They don't have a clue which cave is the cave of Adullam, because there are hundreds of caves in there. So put yourself there in your David for a second. You feel pretty secure in that place, probably? Potentially, right? But guess who probably knows that it's also a pretty good hiding spot? Saul. Guess who has his feelers out and his chasers out? Saul. But yet, for some reason, the people of Saul never found David. But do you know who does find David here? Look in chapter 22 and verse 1. So David departed from there, and he escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there too. Guess who was able to find him? His family. They went to him. Do you remember what his brothers even really thought about him? Remember when he wanted to go and fight Goliath, what his brothers said that were in the war? You can't do that. They didn't have a lot of confidence in him at one time. And he was the one that was going to be king, but he wasn't the firstborn of their family. There might have been some jealousy, but now, guess what? It seems to be the opposite. They either have care or they need him, and they come to him. But they weren't the only ones who came to him. Notice in verse 2. That everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him. And he became captain over them. And there was with him about 400 men. You got the king chasing you, but yet you got people flocking to you. Because they need you. And notice who the people are. They're not your wealthy. They're not your people who've got it all together. You're not your people who are all happy and joyful in their lives. But rather, it's the people that got no money. It's the people who owe somebody else. It's the people who have hardships and stress in their life. And it is these people who are bitter in their soul. Why would they risk going to David knowing that what Saul is trying to do to him? That tells us a little something about David, doesn't it? That they understand that this guy is different. So it reminds you a little bit of Jesus. When Jesus is not, quote, on the run, but he's trying to escape and he's trying to get away and get a little rest and relaxation away from the crowds in Israel. And he goes up and there's a Syrophoenician woman who keeps begging him to heal her daughter with a demon. And he says, "Woman, the children are fed. The dogs, they get the crumbs that fall from the master's table." And she's like, "Yeah, I'm a dog, but they still get the crumbs." And he couldn't believe her faith. He was amazed by her faith and he helped her. And he comes back and the people, they are on the way and they have listened to him for day after day after day, and he is afraid that they are going to faint if he sends them away because they've had nothing to eat. And so he has mercy on them. He has compassion on them. And as it said, when he fed the 5,000, because they were like sheep who had no shepherd. Very similar to what Jesus did. Even when things were pressing around on him and life was really hard on him, guess who he was always thinking about? Those who needed. That kind of goes back to even that final week of his life, doesn't it? That final night. When he knows that his hour is at hand and his betrayer is right there in the midst. And what is he doing for the rest of those there? He is preparing them for what they are going to go through in the next few hours, and what they will go through the next few days, and in the next few years, rather than focusing and lamenting on himself. He was always focused on them. But David isn't able to hang out in these caves very long, because if the family can find him, and the people in distress and death can find him, guess who else can find him? Oh, Saul. So he goes and he leaves and he flees for Mizpah of Moab. So let me put up a little map here. This is Mizpah of Israel. It's much closer. But the text doesn't tell us that he went to Mizpah of Israel, does it? It says he went to Mizpah of Moab, which is probably some 50 miles away. It's a long way away. Through the desert on the other side of the mountain range. Why go to Mizpah of Moab? Look now down in verse 3 of 22. David went there from Mizpah of Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, please do what? Let my father and my mother stay with you. Is there anybody that we want to protect more when things are going bad for us and people are out to get us than our family? Isn't that one of the ways that really evil people and really wicked people say they're going to get back at us? You wrong me, I'm going to kill your wife. I'm going to torture your children. I'm going to kill your parents. We don't want that, do we? We want our parents to be taken care of. We want our parents to have safety. Does that sound familiar to somebody? While they were dying? Jesus on the cross, woman, behold your son. Son, your mother. Again, always looking out for them. They may get me, but they're not going to get you. Looking out for them. So you say, why in Mizpah of Moab? It's foreigners. That's strangers. It's, again, the enemies in one sense. Do you remember, is there somebody in David's family that might have been from Moab? How about his grandmother, Ruth? He may have had help in that place and family in that place. And he takes his own family there for the safety. And they stay in the citadel. They stay in the castle where they are safe and where they are protected. But verse 5, a prophet is sent to them, the prophet Gad, and says, David, you need to leave. And so the father and the mother stay, but David left. And David leaves for this place called the Forest of Hereth. Now he's told to go back to Judah. Remember who's in Judah chasing him, wanting him dead? Saul. It's interesting that the Lord wants him to go back to this place. So this Forest of Hereth. Can you picture on this map anywhere that kind of looks like a forest based on the topography? How about the one green spot up there? That is the Forest of Hereth. And it's pretty close to our Cave of Adullam. The Cave of Adullam is our second little one there. So I'll point it back. Here's our Cave of Adullam right there. There is Nob right there. It's kind of in between these places. And so what you have while David is somewhere in this wilderness, and we do not know where he is at in this wilderness, we have a picture of Saul coming back into picture. And he goes and he attacks the city of Nob. Remember what happened in Nob? That is the place in which David was given help from Elimelech the priest with the showbread, with the holy bread and the sword. And he finds out that he had been helped. Doeg the Edomite was there the day that David was helped. And so Saul with his men and his servants and Doeg the Edomite, they go. And Saul says, kill these prophets, or these priests. And the men would not, except for Doeg the Edomite. And Doeg took his sword, and he killed Ahimelech the priest, and he took revenge on the priest. Why? Because they helped his enemy. They helped the one he was jealous of. And he didn't just take it out on Elimelech, the one priest. You know who else he took it out on? 85 others. And he didn't just take it out on the priest. He took revenge on the entire city. His own city, he took it out on. To the fact where he killed men and women, children and infants. Not to mention the ox, the donkey, and the sheep. Do you see the danger of helping out David while he's on the run? You have got a king who is only about 2 miles away who said, I am going to kill you if you help this man. That's crazy. No, know the worst part about this story? What Saul does to his own town of Nob, his own people. He was told in chapter 15 to go to the Amalekites and to destroy them. Oxen, beasts, everything that lived, including men and women, children and infants. And you know what he did to that city? He spared the king, and he spared the best of the flocks. We're talking about a man that's got no mercy on his own people, but he's got more mercy on people that are not his own people than his own. One last application. Do we ever get to the point where we become so jealous and so angry that even if our own family, or our own brethren, if they side with the other person, we would rather them suffer more than someone out there? Or flat out, he was told to do it for the Amalekites, and he didn't do it. And that was the instance in which the crown was going to be removed from him. But this time he does it on his own, and he does even worse. Because these people, had they done anything wrong? No, they had done what was right. So David, verse 22, he feels responsible for this. David said to Abiathar, "I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul, and I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house." The grandson of Elimelech got away. And you know what David offers him, even though he feels completely responsible for the death of his family and all those priests? Verse 23, "Stay with me. Do not be afraid, for he who seeks my life seeks yours, and with me you shall be in safety." He takes more into his little family. He offers protection for Abiathar, and Abiathar, we will see throughout the rest of David's life, becomes like his personal priest. This is a man who will be with him thick and thin, because guess what that man does for him? He goes to God on his behalf. And that gets us to our next point. While he's in the forest of Herod, David hears that the Philistines are attacking a Israelite city of Keilah, or Keilah, however you say that. And David, instead of going on his own and doing what he thinks, do you know what he does, verse 2? He inquired of the Lord. And the Lord said, "Go, deliver them." And David's men were afraid. And the reason for being afraid is, we've got enemies here in Judah, and we got Philistine enemies. We're getting war on both sides. Why are we going to leave this safe haven and go save these people? David understood that. And so guess what David did? He inquired of the Lord again. And the Lord said, "Go save Keilah." So he went. And he saved Keilah. And he delivers them from the Philistines. But guess who hears that David is in Keilah? Saul. And Saul doesn't just hear that he's there. He gathers up his men of war and he's after these people. What did he just do to Nob? Wipe them out. What do you think is going to happen to Keilah? You help David, guess what that means for you? Okay? So guess what happens? The story goes, David understands that he's coming. And so he inquires of the Lord again. Says, "Will the people of Keilah give me over to Saul?" And the Lord says, "Yeah, they're going to surrender you to Saul." Do what? "I just saved these people. But yet, they are going to turn me over to the enemy." You ever felt betrayed like that? I haven't felt betrayed like that either, where I've saved someone and they just completely turn over. But how would that make you feel? See how Jesus might feel? Saves us. We completely turn on Him. Why? Because we're more afraid of the enemy. We're We're afraid of what Saul is going to do to us or what the devil is going to do to us, and we are terrified of that more than being thankful for what he's done and risk our own lives for that. So David leaves, he flees after he inquires of the Lord. And he goes. And he gets out of the place, and Saul learns that he leaves, and believe it or not, Saul stops. Saul doesn't keep up his expedition. He ends the thing. And this gets us to our final place in which David goes. David then goes to this wilderness of Ziph in our story this morning. And it is a place in which he will come back to later on. But I want you to notice how our text tells us this in chapter 23 and verse 14. So David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. Do you understand the lesson that we're supposed to get from all this? Sometimes we have a season where we are on the run, where Satan is out to get us harder than normal. Where you're going to find yourself fighting every single day and trying to protect yourself every single day from the evil. And guess what David wrote during this time? Psalm 34. I will bless the Lord at all times. All those who go to Him, their faces will be radiant. He closes out the psalm by saying, the afflictions of the righteous are many, but the Lord delivers them out of all. The truth is, when we're on the run, we need help. And obviously, David was helped by the Lord. But you know what? Who else he was helped by? The Lord's people. Don't we need each other? Don't we need the other priests of God when we're fighting for our lives and we're trying to protect ourselves? Of course we do. But don't we also need help from those that are outside? He went to them. They needed any help you can get. But as Psalm 34 makes it clear, it was still the Lord who was protecting him, using these other people and the natural landscape. It's all there because of God. But again, the thing that stands out to me the most is when he was fighting the most for his life is that he was always helping other people. Yeah, we help our family. Obviously, it's family. But what about the outcasts of the nation? What about the people that nobody else wants anything to do with? And I've got all this after me and I'm just trying to survive here. But yet somebody else needs. You know what David and the Lord do? That's us. We're the outcast. We had a debt that we could not pay. We had stresses that we could not save ourselves from. But yet, he did. Because he had this help. Am I going to give someone that is lowly the time of day? And finally, that last little group, he helped his nation. His own people are getting attacked. Saul, the king, didn't care about his nation. He would have gone and attacked the city too. And he destroyed her. But David, in his tender heart, he gave help. And he delivered that city. That's why Psalm 34, he not only talks about the Lord and how the Lord helped him, but he turns it in verse 11, where he says, come to me, and I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Who desires to have good life and to see good days? Let him turn his eye from evil and do all these things. Let him seek peace and pursue it. Because he wanted to help these lowly find the Lord. I don't know about you. And I think this keeps coming up as a recurring theme in my life here in the last little bit. When things are going bad, guess what? They're going bad for somebody else. And if I'm only thinking about myself when the things are bad, I'm not being like the Lord, and not being like the people who tried to be like Him. And I got to do a better job. And maybe you do too. Thankfully, the Lord does deliver us from all those things. God will not allow Satan to have dominion over us. Power of sin.